So good morning, everybody, and welcome. This is Lizzie and Justin, and we are here again on a Sunday morning at around 9 o'clock in the morning UK time for another week of our third space Turning Towards Life conversation podcast project. And I want to say, Lizzie, welcome to you and welcome to me, and also welcome to all of you who are here with us. It's such a thing that we have a community of people listening and being part of this conversation. So you are so welcome to be here, whether you're with us live this day after Christmas Day morning, or listening on a podcast or on Instagram or on Spotify or on YouTube or on our lovely turningtowards.life website. You're also welcome to be here. And this week we have, Lizzie, a wonderful source, like a wellspring. This is what we do every week, is have some writing which launches us off into half an hour of conversation that you've written for us and for this, Lizzie, which I'm so grateful for. So thank you.
Thank you, Justin. Justin, just as you were speaking, I was remembering that you posted a statistic this week of 30,000 somethings. And I wonder, can you explain what that is? Because I didn't really understand where it came from or what it meant. But it was about Turning Towards
in
Life.
In the last week, as much as you can make anything from the statistics that come, we reached 30,000 listens to this conversation on podcasts.
Wow.
So that's Spotify, Apple Music, Google Podcasts, all the TuneIn Podcasts, all the places that people listen to podcasts. So it doesn't count Instagram and it doesn't count YouTube, but over the time we've been doing this, 30,000 times our conversations have been listened to.
That's amazing.
A completely arbitrary number, right? But it's also feels to me something about the spread and the depth and the reach of this conversation we've been having. I've certainly never had any other conversation in my life that's been listened to 30,000 times. Usually just once. So it felt significant to me to let us all know that that's what was happening.
That's amazing. And amazing for me to know that the podcast is a really good way for people to be listening and sharing. And that's really lovely. Thank you. So everyone, you might have also worked out by now that Justin knows those kinds of things and knows how to get that access to those figures and do those things. And Justin, I'm ever grateful for your capacity to twiddle the buttons and find out the information and make it all work. So thank you. So here we go. This is something I wrote the other day, and it came, Justin, out of this internal family systems work that you and I are always seeming to be learning about these days. And it kind of came out of a bigger conversation than internal family systems, which is, as a person encountering other people, what background are we coming from when we are in a healing conversation with someone, or cooking the dinner with them, or helping them with something, or talking to them about God knows what? It's like, in any kind of relationship, what kind of background are we holding? And when I say background, I mean, what kind of definition of a human being am I implicitly holding as I'm with you, as I'm speaking to you? And I just want to say something about it. And so I had a go, you know, I wrote something down. And of course, so many times writing something down, the words don't quite meet the feeling or the experience. But I thought, just as you said, Justin, we could have a piece of writing that sends us in a certain particular direction at the beginning and see where we go. So here we go. So your implicit equals my possibility. You see me as whole. You trust me. You treat me as capable. You encourage me. You feel me to be complete. You allow me. Each day you welcome me as new. You accept me. No fixing, no changing. Something way deeper. Something far wider. What's implied in your words, your actions, your feelings towards me, That's what's most powerful, what's implied. That's what shapes me most profoundly. That you trust me makes me trustworthy. That you love me makes me lovable. That you honor me makes me honorable. That you have faith in me makes me faithful. We're connected, not separate. My depth and all that comes from my background shapes what's possible for you. Your depth and all that comes from your background shapes what's possible for me.
Thank you, Lizzie, both for reading that and for writing it. So I'm going to read to your implicit equals my possibility. You see me as whole. You trust me. You treat me as capable. You encourage me. You feel me to be complete. You allow me. Each day you welcome me as new. You accept me. No fixing, no changing. Something way deeper, something far wider. What's implied in your words, your actions, your feelings towards me, that's what's most powerful, what's implied. That's what shapes me most profoundly. That you trust me makes me trustworthy. That you love me makes me lovable. That you honor me makes me honorable. That you have faith in me makes me faithful. We are connected, not separate. My depth and all that comes from my background shapes what's possible for you. Your depth and all that comes from your background shapes what's possible for me.
Thank you, Justin. So I feel like somehow, Justin, all of our inner work, all of the ways that we're in our development, as that arises for us, as we practice, as we reflect, as we learn, as we become aware of things, these things have been brought to the light, and then it's like they get thrown into the background, and those things that we've learned become where we come from. And so in this process, what I can see is that my, and I guess that the background from which I come, so the way I'm defining things as I'm interacting with them, is a constant process of refining going on. So who I take you to be, as a, just as a being, I'm learning all the time about what beings are, what the nature of them is, what the nature of me is. And as I deepen and as I learn, my implicit, my background, my where I'm coming from shifts and changes all the time. I've been noticing that whatever place that implicit is in any given moment, has a huge impact on who people can be in relationship with me and or outside of relationship with me. It's not only between me and you, it's between me and the world, me and everyone. So who I take a being to be applies to every being. And particularly here, I'm talking about human being, but I'm sure it works with other beings too. That what my definition of a human being is, which includes you, determines what I say to you, how I am with you, what I think about you, what I know is possible for you. And I feel like we don't really often get in the normal culture of things. I know I haven't got many times and still don't get that who I'm being is what calls you out in whatever part of you I'm calling forth by being the way I'm being. So if you see me as whole, you can trust me if you see me as broken, it might be harder to trust me. If you feel me to be complete, you can allow me to be whoever I am, because my completeness is the way you've defined me. So if you thought I was broken, needed fixing, it would be really hard for you to accept me, because you'd be trying to change me all the time. So I feel like I'm in this place of seeing the relationship between how I'm being and what is possible for the person in front of me because of the way I'm being. And that's really what I'm trying to point to, which seems a little bit elusive at times to try and explain it. But I feel like I've had these really strong experience of profoundly being, I think the word is shaped, maybe even determined. Like I feel like I'm being called forth in very particular ways by very different people. So when someone is being a certain way with me, where I'm feeling, so the other day somebody was really worried about me and it was horrible, and I could find myself being really anxious and worried, and because of the person worrying about me, and I suddenly thought, hold on, I've got to like hold myself in a different way here, because I could feel myself being totally determined by the implicit worry that was behind all these requests and behind all these concerns. And I thought, my gosh, this is quite something to be worried about. Look who it turns me into when I'm worried about. Look who I will be turning people into when I worry about them. And in the same kind of few hours, I had also been really, really, really trusted to do something that felt really scary and risky. But the person was like, yeah, you're fine, you can do it. And I thought, I galvanized myself into this kind of hopeful, positive way where I could do something that felt really challenging. And I felt like because I was trusted, I could do it. So it was this kind of magnifying experience that had me write this, that, which also came from the internal family systems work that we're doing. And it just feels really, really, really powerful and really important to know that this is what's going on. Because if I don't know this is what's happening, I'm determining so much about me and other people without realizing the impact that I'm having.
It was wonderful hearing you talk about this, Lizzie, and I'm so appreciating your writing, that you, in your writing and in your speaking, you're making this generous effort to put into language something that's quite hard to put into language.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons I think it's quite hard to put into language is that it's counterintuitive for many of us. And why is it counterintuitive for many of us? Because it goes in the opposite direction to the common sense understanding in our culture that we have of what people are.
Yeah.
So that's why this really matters. The thing that came most strongly for me as you were talking and as you were giving examples of your own experience in recent days is to say, that it shows me again how we're not separate from one another, which is what I think you say, three quarters of the way through, that we're connected and not separate. But it's quite easy in our ordinary way of thinking about it, if someone says we're connected, to think that what that means is, well, of course we're connected, like I'm over here and you're over there and we're connected to one another. But I can hear that what you're inviting us into is to see that the kind of non-separateness that we are from one another is that we're shaping one another all the time. And that we're shaping one another. One part, I think, of what lots of us learn or get taught is that we're essentially separate from one another. But the second thing that we get taught is that everything that happens between us happens in what's explicit. So I say something to you, and what I say is the only kind of relationship we're in with one another. And what I can hear you saying and giving such powerful examples about is the way before language we're not separate from one another, and that there's a whole world of you called it a way of being, and I think I find that really helpful language. Or another way of it is there's a whole world that we each are, and that when we're with one another, our worlds are profoundly affecting one another. So to be with, could feel myself feeling in the beginning of your writing, all the times that I'm with people who I know are prepared to see me as whole and to trust me, what that makes possible in me before they've even spoken. And of course, in all likelihood, what you'll say to me because you see me as whole and you trust me will be coherent with one who sees me as whole and trusts me, but that's not where it begins. It begins because we're not separate things relating to one another, but, and now language fails. Well, what are we if we're not that? We're whole worlds. And what you said and what you're writing opens up for me is this huge possibility, and also this very big responsibility we have towards one another, which is to start to see that the way that we orient to others is profoundly, profoundly shaping of the possibilities for the others that we're with. And maybe because most of us have grown up in a culture which has got really, really good at manipulating things and controlling things and predicting things. That's what's allowed us to make technology and so many of the sort of material things that help us have really helped us in so many ways in our lives, but they're all about having control, ways that we get control over the world. Maybe it's not surprising that it's hard for us to see one another as whole and capable and complete, because that in order for me to orient to you that way, to carry that orientation, I have to be willing to not try to make you any particular way, but essentially is to bring my commitment to trustworthiness and love and honor and faith and depth your way, and then be prepared to trust what it is that happens between us. And that's so different from you're a thing like a broken car or a piece of computer software that needs upgrading or something like that. Such a different place to stand, and it's really at odds with the way that we see most of existence, I think.
Yeah, I so appreciate that, Justin. And what's arising for me is this knowing that there's a way I can be with people where I have an agenda, and there's a way I know I can be with people and I don't have one. And what happens in the two different realms of agendaness and non-agendaness is really different. So, you were saying that we might want to fix people. I know I have felt on the end of being fixed in my life, and I really, really hate it. Like, I don't enjoy being a project for someone to do something with. And I'm reminded, I did a program once, a supervision program, supervision being when we receive support for the support work we're doing. That was the context of it. And I studied some things with some psychotherapists and counselors. And that work is really different to the work that you and I do, Justin. And I think this is one of the ways it's different. And I've never studied those things, so I don't know. But what I do know is being held by someone who feels like there's something that they've got to find and they're going to get there. Like that we've got to go back to somewhere to find the issue, and then we're going to unravel it and then come back again. Like if it's really sensible, I'm sure in a lot of contexts it is. But having done this work around, that's centered around wholeness and to be in these conversations that are around what's emergent, what's here, who are we in our wholeness and our essence, to have me be in the seat of art. We're going to find the problem, we're going to solve it, and then your life is going to be better. For me, having been on the end of that, it was really, really, it created a big aversion in me. Like, I need to run as fast as I can. And so I've experienced the power of the implicit being you're a problem to fix, and felt really like horrified by it. Like, I never want to be doing that to people. I mean, I was grateful for the experience too, because I was like, oh gosh, this is what it feels like if I try and fix someone. Let me never do this. Let me make some kind of vow in myself that I'm not gonna sit here and go, right, what's the problem and let's fix it, and treating you like a problem. So I'm really grateful to have been treated like a problem. And by the way, of course, there was lots of good intention there, and it's not like there was bad people being horrible to me, but it did create a big stand in me that I didn't want to be a problem solver when it came to human beings. And so I feel like there's a lot of our systems generally that have this inherent in it that make me want to run. And I think, Justin, one of the ways that our work together feels like home is there's something much more interesting happening than problem solving problems. It's like infinitely more compelling to wander into conversation with someone and find, intentionally look for goodness, intentionally look for the light, and not be averse to anything that we find anywhere, but for us not to have an agenda around it, for us not to have a particular place that we think we have to get you to, or I have to get to, or something. And so what happens, I think, which is what you're pointing to, is this kind of deepening of trust of each other, of what's here, becomes more and more and more possible the more we do it. And then, as you said, we can be people around whom others aren't looking to wriggle into the shape we've created for them to be, which is like a particular something that's out of our making. You know, I'm thinking of our children. You know, as a parent, you know, if I make a particular kind of cutout that my child has to be, how differently will I experience them? Rather than holding my hands and my body open and gazing and wondering what on earth is going on here with this human being and me, and what even is this? So being wide open to someone's being and their nature and what they long for and who they might be to the world, rather than, right, we're going to bring you up, you're going to be well behaved, and you're going to become a dentist or something. You know, it's like I can feel in my life anyway a big undoing that's had to happen for me to be the person who can hold my hands up and wonder. And of course, when I get afraid, I go, oh no, okay, let's just all be like this or something. But this practice with you, Justin, and all of our wider work together feels like it's building my implicit world in such a brilliant way. And I'm so grateful for it, because it turns me out of trying to make you who I think you should be into who are you and what is going on here. And of course, in that is an inherent kind of uncertainty, because I don't know the answer to any of those questions. And that's the nature of it. But what it feels like it affords us all then is a kind of freedom to become what we're becoming naturally, without being kind of shoehorned in some actually quite useless way. Like, just because I want you to be something doesn't mean that that's going to happen. And so I'm just feeling profoundly grateful for my implicit being continually reshaped all the time by learning and opening and wondering and allowing myself to not know and to not have anything fixed at all.
I'm really I'm really struck that very often the urge we feel to fix one another, whether it's our clients, if we're coaches or therapists, or you know, in some kind of work where we bring ourselves in support of the unfolding of other people, or whether it's parents, or whether it's work colleagues, or people on our teams, if you have people who you manage, or whether it's your children, or... that so often our impetus to fix comes from fear.
Mm.
Because what we're essentially doing is the assumption, because I can feel it in myself, I can speak about this because it arises in myself very quickly. Well, if I wasn't trying to get you straightened out, Lizzie, what would I be doing? Mm. I'd be being irresponsible. I wouldn't be doing anything. I'd just be watching whilst you, you know, walk off the edge of the cliff or something. And I wonder if I wanted to speak into that, because to the parts of me that feel like if I wasn't trying to sort of grasp, think about this as being a parent, the fearful parts of me, that if I don't steer you and I don't make you that way, I'll be being irresponsible and I'll be doing nothing, is to say, well, the alternative is a kind of deep care.
Mm.
That when we deeply care about somebody, and we also trust their, we're willing to trust them, and we're willing to treat them as capable and complete, then all kinds of things become possible. So one thing that becomes possible is that we can speak words of encouragement to one another. We can say to you, I can say to you, Lizzie, I can see that if you walk that way, I think you might fall. And I wonder if you can see that too. What's that like for you? And is that what you want?
Mm.
Is that what you intend? We can start to be in that kind of conversation with you. Mm. We can tell truth to one another. We can speak truthfully much more when we're willing to stand in this, I trust you, I treat you as capable, I want to encourage you. So I just wanted to say that, because your writing points into this very powerfully when you say there's something deeper and wider than fixing and changing. It's not like fixing and changing or just checking out. We can meet one another from a deeper something of ourselves and a wider something of ourselves, and then we can really take profound care of one another,
mm-hmm.
and support one another in our unfolding as parents, as partners, as friends, as co-workers, as coaches, as therapists, as teachers, as... And what's very, very present to me as I'm speaking is, it seems to me so much of the world that we live in has been built on fear rather than the other. So it's so easy for us to reach for this fixing mode. And so I'm going to draw on what you said, and I want to pose this. What if instead of fixing, we trusted, we loved, we honored, we cultivated faith in one another, and we saw that our own depth and everything that we're carrying with us shapes what's possible for one another. Not our reaching into one another with screwdrivers and spanners and wrenches. And that, yeah. I think, is the invitation that you're making.
Mm-hmm. When I receive that from you, Justin, I think about the quality of relationship backwards and forwards that gets to emerge by being that. And how undiminished I feel when you say those words. And there's some diminishing that happens when you try and fixing me that I really don't enjoy. So I feel like there's a way that we make each other different sizes by the way we interact with one another. And I don't think it's enjoyable for humans to feel small, because it's just not our nature. And so in terms of order of things, a problem is so, so small by comparison to a mystery. And so if you treat me like a mystery, I feel like you're respecting the magnitude of me. Whereas if you treat me like a problem, it's like I know you're missing so much of me. I just know that. And so I'm feeling really committed to not treating people like problems in this moment, because I'm feeling really attuned to what it feels like to be treated like one. It's just not okay. And I just want to express my gratitude again that we can be in these conversations, Justin, and find language as best we can for things that feel hard to find language for. So thank you for being here, and thank you everyone for participating. And the more and more I speak to people who listen, it's like we really are in relationship. You know, I spoke to someone this week who has been listening to us since the beginning, Justin, and it was so sweet to actually finally talk, because so much is in the implicit now of our relationship, because you and I are here, Justin, being ourselves, and we can't see or hear the people in relationship with us who are watching or listening. But when we do come into contact, what's happened is in the relationship, it's in the field between us. So we have to play a little bit of catch up, but the people listening and watching have been in catch up mode with us for a long time now. I want to really appreciate that. Thank you for knowing us and receiving us, if you're listening and watching. And we will be back next week with another source. And thank you, Justin, for being in this together with me today.
Thanks, Lizzie. Thanks, everyone.
Bye, everyone.